You're listening to Cannabis Health Radio. Here are your hosts, Ian Jessup and Corey Yelland.
Welcome to another episode of Cannabis Health Radio. I'm Ian Jessup.
And I'm Corey Yelland.
As many regular listeners are aware, with this podcast, we interview people from around the world who have used cannabis to treat very serious illnesses and diseases. In some cases, doctors have given up on them and offered no hope.
And we do this to help as many people as we possibly can with inspiring stories of those who have made remarkable, positive changes in their health through the use of cannabis. Our mission at Cannabis Health Radio is to make a difference in the lives of others. But we can't do this alone. We need your help.
To assist us in continuing our work, go to the donate page on our website, cannabishealthradio.com. And make a financial contribution today.
You can find various ways to support us, either through a one-time donation or a monthly contribution through Patreon. This is listener-supported radio, folks, and we do need your help, both in helping others and to keep us up and running. Please make a contribution today. Both Ian and I thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.
In August of last year, our guest ended up in an emergency room of his local hospital where he was diagnosed with cancer. Joining us from Central Europe is Bert, who does not want us to use his last name, so we'll respect that. Bert, good of you to do this, and thanks for getting in touch with us to tell your story.
Thank you.
Take us back to last summer and tell us some of the symptoms you were experiencing that forced you to go to the hospital.
It was a really slow building thing, and I wasn't really paying attention to it. I get kind of involved in my work, and I guess I want to ignore anything that's wrong or interfering with my work. But you know what had been happening was had real trouble going to the bathroom. It would be just frequent. Four or five times every morning, and then, okay, it's done. I get on with my work. Another thing was that I'd get really tired. I'd wake up in the morning and for no reason, I felt like somebody'd run over me with a truck in the night. And I just couldn't, you didn't want to get out of bed. I mean, you're awake, you have to get out of bed, but it was overwhelming. But then, three or four cups of coffee later and I'm up and about and doing my work again. So I just was ignoring this stuff and thinking, well, maybe I need to just, I'll eat a little better. Or I'll stop eating this or something. But, I was ignoring it. And finally, blood started coming in, coming out when I was,
on the toilet.
First it was a little bit, then it was a little bit more, and I thought, okay, well, I'll try and adjust my diet a little. I'll be careful. I'll cut out dairy products. Maybe that's irritable bowel syndrome or something. And then one night, it just started flowing, and it was coming out in such large quantities and so fast that it didn't take a lot of figuring to decide that I better go to the hospital, because if it continued, I wouldn't have enough blood in the morning to be alive. So I went to the emergency room, and what it turned out to be, and I guess I'm just I think I am a really lucky person in some ways, but what it turned out to be was a burst hemorrhoid that was doing the bleeding. And because of this, it was an internal one, so I didn't even know it existed. And it turned out that, because of that, they found this tumor. Normally, like the guy in the emergency room, the doctor there was, he said, well, it's a really good thing you came in.
It is a really good thing you came in.
Yeah, it was like, who on the planet would ever think that a burst hemorrhoid would be something lucky?
Yeah,
that's right.
Were you having any pain?
No, see, that's the thing. They said that typically, the doctors told me later, that they said you were really lucky, because with this type of tumor in this location, you're not going to feel any pain until it's too late, until you've got cancer throughout your body. Because I guess this type of cancer is really good at spreading to other body parts.
Mm-hmm. Seeding out.
It works its way through the wall of the rectum, and then it just goes crazy. It'll go into your liver, very likely go into your liver, into your lungs, prostate, lymph nodes. You know, it just has a party.
Bert, what did it do to you emotionally when the doctor said you have a tumor, rectal tumor?
You know, it didn't really affect me at all. It kind of just made sense.
Also,
you know, it was like all of a sudden everything stopped, and I kind of realized how bad I was feeling.
And,
and when he told me that, it was like, well, you know what? That really makes sense. And I didn't really feel anything. I was in kind of a fog of, I think, just general ill health. It's, you know, it was like I almost wasn't there. I was outside of myself or something. But I didn't have any great, like, emotional response to it. My first response was, okay, I've got to do something.
Yeah, it sounds to me, hearing you talk, that once the doctor diagnosed you with a tumor, it was probably within you somehow, in your subconscious, a sense of relief that, my God, they finally found out what's wrong with me, why I'm so tired, why I'm bleeding, and now we can do something about it.
You know what? You may be 100% right in that.
So what was your next move?
Well, the next day I scheduled an appointment with a specialist oncologist for that area, gastrointestinal oncologist, and who was also a surgeon. You know, he kind of confirmed everything and we started scheduling all the tests, you know, that had to come up. So there was MRIs, a couple MRIs, one of the just the that area, another one that kind of was from the lungs down. And then I also got an X-ray of the lung area because this cancer does spread. So they were checking basically everything from the crotch to the neck, you know. And everything came up with nothing. There was no sign of any cancer anywhere except, you know, in that one spot. So once again, I was incredibly lucky.
And you opted for chemo and radiation, correct?
Well, that's what they prescribed, and like I say, I was kind of like in this fog of just kind of waking up after a long sleep and doing whatever anybody told me, and so that's what they. But it didn't start. It didn't start for. It was the last week of September that started. So it was over a month from the original diagnosis. But, you know, in that time, there were blood tests and MRIs and the X-rays and a colonoscopy, you know, biopsy. Those things all took place. I think that may have been the first thing they did. So,
were you doing any research into possible alternative modes of treatment at that stage in the game?
Well, the only thing that really happened at that stage, as far as alternatives, was that a couple of people, family members and a close friend, had mentioned, cannabis. Just like with my reaction to, you know, the chemotherapy and the radiation treatments, you know, those being suggested, I'm like, okay, I'm going ahead. Well, they suggested this, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to do that. And I immediately ordered seeds. So, from Amsterdam, and got them going. So that was, at that point, that was the only, you know, up until the chemotherapy and stuff started, that was the only steps I had taken in that direction, and really the only research I had done in that direction, because I was still just reading everything I could about what I had. And, you know, from the medical standpoint, mm-hmm. you know, to I wanted to understand what the hospital was doing.
Bert, is cannabis oil in the area that you're living, is it available, or is your only option to grow your own plant material and get it that way? Or
oh, good Lord, it's completely illegal.
Okay, so not easy to find at all.
I'd be looking at jail time. I wouldn't even know how to
start
to, you know, yeah, you couldn't even approach anyone. I mean, it's so I had to go to Amsterdam
and grow your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Tell me about your trip to Amsterdam and how you managed to deal with your ailment there.
Well, that was much later. That was after I'd done the radiation and chemo, and then had a follow up MRI, which had shown that it had done some good, messed up other parts of my body, but I was very lucky. Once again, very lucky person. I have a really good friend in Amsterdam who is also a doctor, a general practitioner. I had let her know what was going on and everything, and she was just like an angel or something, just extremely helpful in every way that you could imagine, and helped me to, you know, get the material. I mean, by that time, of course, I had read about Rick Simpson oil and decided I was going to do that. So, you know, and so she helped me through the whole process, and we made the oil, and I got I came back with 21 grams of material.
What was what was the status of your cancer at that stage of the game when you started on the oil?
Well, that was just after, that was 5 weeks after the chemo and radiation had ended. And they'd just taken an MRI, which had shown that it had been significantly reduced in size, which for what I had, it often responds well to chemo and radiation. So there was nothing bad. There was no bad news at that point. But the doctor's next step was to just go in and cut everything out. And, you know, it's, he wouldn't tell me. It was so funny. I mean, it's not funny. It's horrible, but it was funny. He wouldn't tell me that they were going to cut out my butthole, you know? I knew that that's what was going to happen.
Well, that's just a small detail.
Yeah, that's just a small detail. You know, and the other thing is, I'm reading all this stuff. I'm reading, you know, medical journals that are intended for doctors. And, you know, okay, I struggled through some of them, but I could get some of the gist of what was going on, and read through all these studies they'd done in England and South America, other places. Well, there's only like a 55% chance that they would get all the cancer with the operation.
Mm-hmm. This is a familiar story.
And if you did nothing at my stage, there was a 45% chance that, you know, it wouldn't come back. It would just go away. So, you know, it's like you're going to go through this major, major operation. It's not a small deal. You know, they have to come in through the front, and they're almost guaranteed to mess a bunch of other stuff up, specifically, you know, the functioning of your parts that you want to have functioning. You know, so not only are they going to take out your butt, they're going to mess something else up, and there's no guarantee that they got the cancer. So I'm like, this is a really bad deal.
Jesus, sounds bloody horrible. Just hearing you talk about it sounds horrible.
Yeah, Ian's squirming.
Yeah, I just... the thought of it. I mean, Corey's told the story many times about her anal canal cancer and the doctors prescribing radiation, saying that it will close your...
Fuse my rectum shut and my vagina.
You know? Yeah, but then they said, we can take care of that. Well, no, you can't take care of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They'll take care of it. Yeah. Right. Yes. From their point of view.
Yeah.
Yeah, from their point of view, it'll be taken care of, just not yours.
Bert, can I ask you a question? You were talking about how the chemo and the radiation had messed up other parts. What did you mean by that?
Well, it was bad. The chemo, I don't really know. I mean, in the first part of the chemo, it made me feel better. I immediately felt better that week. I remember it quite well. But the radiation didn't make me feel better, and it started to get really wearing. And by the end, it had taken You know, I checked on things. I'd get out a mirror and look, you know, and I'm interested in this stuff. I know, you know, a lot of people think, oh, that's gross. He's looking at his butt, but it doesn't bother me. And it had just turned into this large red cavern of, you know, just this horrible looking, you know, thing, which I didn't really recognize as being a part of me. And it turned out also in the MRI that the prostate was messed up. It was swollen by it and turned into kind of a, they described it as being like spongy.
Well, you are not the first person to tell me this.
You know, it's not, there's still no sign of cancer in the prostate. It just had some, you know, some other tests after that. You know, but it's not operating correctly. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, it's...
It didn't care for the radiation.
No. I mean, this, you know, what they do as far as when it... I mean, doctors are great when it comes to, you know, fixing your eyes or fixing a broken leg or giving you a new joint. I mean, the things that they can do are absolutely amazing. But when they're dealing with cancer, it's like something out of the Middle Ages. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think they know what they're doing at all. They're just, you know...
Bert, when you talk about your prostate, are you required? Do you have this urgency to urinate now?
No. I mean, yes, I did very much when by the time the chemo and the radiation was over. Well, I'd spent some time. I predicted I was going to be sick, and I've got a little tiny 2-story house, and I built a bed downstairs where the bathroom is, so I wouldn't have to go up and down these stairs. And it was really, I mean, I guess I was smart because by the time it was done, 2 hours did not go by. And I had to go to the toilet every 2 hours, you know, for number one and number two or just number one. But always, you know, you aren't going to go more than 2 hours without, you know, having to pee.
And that's exhausting, and, not getting any sleep.
Yeah, it's exhausting and you can't go anywhere. You can't do anything. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'd go to the mall and I all of a sudden, you know, the first thing I do when I go into a shopping center or something is scope out the toilets, you know, because, you know, and I hope I don't have to break into a run, because I just tried to stay at home at that point. You know, it was really bad, but I don't know. I never gave up or anything, or I would have a couple down days and stuff, but after the chemo was ended, that's when I really started thinking about what am I going to do? Because, you know, it's like they're done. And I'm like, what? I'm just going to sit around and I'm not going to do anything? I mean, nobody's going to do anything about this? Well, the medical system is fine with that, but I wasn't. And so I started looking into dietary things and stuff like that, and I came up with my... I mean, that's really hard to do because every time you find something that sounds like it's good for somebody with cancer and you should eat that, you'll find another site that says never eat that. Yeah. It's so confusing. But I made up my own concoction finally after reading and stuff. And it seemed to have extremely beneficial effects.
What was your concoction?
Well, it's based on carrots, garlic, ginger, turmeric, lemon, and hot pepper. And then I would add green or red cabbage, beets, you know, I mean, whatever I wanted to fill it up. Because I was going through about 5.5 to 6 pounds of vegetables every day. And that yielded about 750 milliliters each time, so 1.5 liters, you know, per day of this juice. And I mean, when I'm saying garlic, I use like 2 bulbs of garlic, not 2 cloves, but 2 full bulbs of garlic.
Yeah.
In each, you know, juicing. So, and a thumb-sized piece of ginger. And it's pretty potent stuff, but it tasted so good. I mean, I knew my body wanted this stuff. I gave it to somebody else once, and they're like, oh, my God, this is horrible. You know, but to me, and it's still, I just had some. I've dropped back to once per day now instead of twice, but I still do it, you know, religiously once per day. And it still, to me, it just tastes so good. So I think that's a good sign that my body wanted this stuff.
Yeah, and you need the phytonutrients in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's great. It's kind of fun, too. I mean, the juicing process, I don't know, I kind of enjoy that, but...
So you're juicing, and you started to take the cannabis oil. What was that like for you?
Oh, gosh. Well, it was surprising how stoned you get. but it's not that bad, except I think it's just maybe it's, you know, for each person it's different. But I don't like being sitting around doing nothing. And sometimes I have no choice. I have to go lay down. I don't sleep, and my mind's going at 1,000 miles an hour, but, you know, I just have to lay down. So I do. You know, I mean, this is a serious issue, and if I have to lay down because I'm, you know, taking some medicine, it's, you know, well, just go do it.
I'm surprised to hear that you don't sleep, because other people we've talked to say that when they take the cannabis oil, they sleep a lot better.
I know. Well, okay, but I do sleep better, but... And here's how I've dealt with it. If I can't take it orally before bed, or if I do, I'll take it right before I go, because, you know, it takes like a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take it right before I go to bed, and then everything's okay. It's just I can't go to sleep when I am in that, you know, in that condition of being high. It's, my mind is just working too fast. But that's one of the things that's improved. I mean, before, you know, even before I was diagnosed with cancer, I'd never sleep the whole night through. And, of course, during the treatments and stuff, it was even worse and like that. But after I started taking the cannabis, I pretty much every night I sleep all night long. I never have to get up once. So, what I was saying, though, was about, so now at night times, I take it suppositorily. If that's a word.
If it isn't, it is now.
Yeah. So, you know, so that pretty much, but this latest batch, I finally made some from the cannabis I'd been growing, and the stuff I made in Amsterdam, it was pretty strong. It was pretty, you know, heavy duty, but this stuff, oh my gosh, I can feel it now. I get high even taking it rectally. You know?
Yeah. Is it a different strain than the stuff you were using?
Yeah, yeah. I've been concentrating on getting as many varieties as I can. And so up to date, I think I had a total of 3, or it might have been 4, I don't remember, in Amsterdam. It's a total of, you know, varieties combined together. And then I have a total of 5 varieties growing, 2 of which I've put into use so far. In making my first batch at home here. So, and I go for the, as far as the seed selection and for the, you know, what I was buying in Amsterdam, I go for the high THC and medium CBD.
And all indica?
Well, I think there's one of them that's a sativa, which is, it's called skunk something or something. But it is a very strong smelling plant, but kind of skunky. I think it's a sativa, but no, I think most of them are indica.
Bert, where you live, do people know you're on cannabis, or is it something that you try and keep quiet?
You wouldn't mention it to a soul.
Oh, okay.
Not even your best friend.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No. Well, my girlfriend, I would, you know, she's the one who, so one of the people who suggested it in the beginning. Mm. And so now I'm going to start making it for her, too. She doesn't have cancer or anything, but, you know, I think it's just healthy. And I think any reasonable person should be having some in their diet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think the smell of garlic will probably take away the smell of the plant that you've got growing.
Well, you know, that it does. If I leave that, you know, you get a huge amount of pulp from the juice. And if I leave that sitting on the counter, that garlic, it fills the whole house.
Yeah. No, I think based on the conversations we've had, and Corey, what do you think? He's doing exactly the right thing with the numerous strains. And
yeah, yes, very much so. When I was in Prague, you know, we had this conversation with a few of the doctors there, and we spoke about the fact that we see more success when people mix up strains when they're trying to treat cancer than when they just use one?
Yeah, it just seems like that would make sense, you know?
Kind of cover...
And there's so little... I mean, I guess there is a lot of research on it, but... But, you know, it just makes sense that you should try, you know, because you don't know what each plant has.
Yeah, they all have varying degrees of, of different levels of cannabinoids, et cetera. So, yeah, you're covering all your bases that way.
Do you know anything about that decarboxylating, is that the right word, process? Where you heat it up?
Yes.
You know, you're supposed to heat it up to like 220 degrees Fahrenheit.
I'm not sure on the temperature, but... did you not heat yours when you were making the oil?
Yeah. I mean, it's heated up, but, you know, I mean, the alcohol, I use, ethyl alcohol, it evaporates at 80 degrees Celsius. So, you know, it never gets up to like, I guess, would that be 150 or no, would it be 200? No. See, that's over boiling. But I was seeing in some videos about that process where they heat it up. But maybe that's just so they can get more high or something. I don't know.
Decarboxylation, by definition, is just warming it up, is it not?
Oh, yeah, I don't...
You know, and so certainly, so you've done that step. I'm really not sure on exact temperatures or whatever, but just the process of heating it, I believe, is what you need to do.
But I think I came up with something I haven't seen in any videos online, and other people might like this. But one of the things in the process, and I just make it like an ounce at a time, 30 grams, approximately an ounce at a time. One of the problems or difficulties in it is when you're filtering it, and people are just putting it through a coffee filter, which works great. I did it like that. But it takes so long, and it also looks to me like it's leaving a lot of stuff in that filter, which I wish was in the oil. So I use an AeroPress coffee maker, if you know what that is.
No, and Ian and I are both looking puzzled.
No, explain that.
I'll look up an AeroPress coffee maker. It's like this. It's like a piece of a lab equipment. It's got a filter in the bottom, and you put the coffee in, and you fill it up with water, and then it's got a rubber plunger, you know, that goes down through it and pushes the...
Oh,
and it
yeah.
works. It worked so good for this process. It just really sped things up. I was really pleased with the results. And I do three rinses on it, which so far on every batch, I've gotten over 10 grams per ounce of oil. So I think it's been working really well.
Interesting.
Bert, when was the last time you had a test for cancer?
Well, I just got the results of some blood tests today, and they're not final, and they're in a language which I still haven't learned very well. So I've still got to wait. But I was, you know, I was going through them online, and there's, as far as I can tell, there's no bad readings on anything.
And you feel good? You feel healthy?
Better than I've felt in 10 years. Easily 10 years.
How much oil would you say you've consumed? Grams-wise, let's just say in grams.
Yes. So far, 22 grams.
22 grams. And how often are you doing it?
Every single day. And then I try to take the most at night, and I put it in the suppositories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and another problem, which might be useful information for other people too, another problem that I had with it was, you know, this, anybody who's tasted it knows it's kind of a peppery, kind of a spicy, peppery taste.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, it's just like hot peppers. Well, you know, hot peppers burn when you eat them, and they burn when they come out. And I think that's what was happening to me with the suppositories, because I'd load those things up with maybe more than I should have. And then it would start to be irritating and burn. Then it would want to, you know, my butt saying, well, you know what, that's going out. And I'm saying, no, keep it in. And say, no, it's coming. And so you'd lose it. And that's really disappointing, because that stuff's expensive, you know. So I started mixing it one part. I just took the oil and mixed it one part oil to two parts coconut oil. Then I melt that and fill up the double zero size, gel caps with that stuff. And that seems to have There's not, like, no irritation now.
So you were just doing it straight oil before?
Yeah. I'd put the straight oil in there, and then I'd kind of like fill it up with the coconut oil, but that wasn't blending them together.
No.
You know, so you'd put it in, and here's this glob of the oil, and it was a little irritating. So I don't know. It's just something what problem that I kind of worked through, and maybe it's helpful for another person.
Well, Bert, it's good to know that you're on the road to recovery. It doesn't appear as though your cancer has spread. It may probably is gone by now. And will you continue using cannabis for the rest of your life?
I'll tell you what else is gone is the hemorrhoids.
Ah.
They just disappeared. I mean, I'm putting my finger up there every night at least once or twice. You know, I know what's going on. I you can feel them.
Yeah.
They're gone.
That's great.
It's smooth as a whistle.
No, that's great. Any words in conclusion, Bert, that you want to tell folks?
Well, if I was going to do this all over again with this type of cancer, which it wasn't an emergency situation. Obviously, the hospitals weren't concerned about it. The time just went by slowly, and I should have just taken the 2 months and started with went to Amsterdam immediately, gotten the oil and started in on that. And with my juicing too. I don't know. That's but I would have done that differently because the radiation and the chemo were damaging. And I don't know if that damage from that is permanent, but it's not fun to deal with.
No, it was great to talk to you, Bert, and appreciate your story, and all the best in the future. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thanks, Bert. We really appreciate you stepping forward and coming on.
Well, I had a few butterflies, but I'm okay now.
Great.
Thanks so much.
All right.
And that's it, another edition of Cannabis Health Radio. Wherever you are in the world, thanks very much for listening.
You've been listening to the Cannabis Health Radio podcast. Visit our website, cannabishealthradio.com, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter.